Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Pitch and Play. I am Ross.
I'm Cassie.
And today we are talking about Stardew Valley, which was pitched by Cassie last time. Do you want to review what you sort of pitched Stardew as before I give any feedback?
Yeah, so it would shock me if anybody listening to this has never heard of Stardew Valley, but Stardew Valley is, I guess broadly you qualify it as like a farming simulator crafting game. It has kind of notes of Minecraft and Animal Crossing and was very heavily influenced by Harvest Moon as kind of like, hey, there hasn't been a good Harvest Moon game in a long time, so I'm going to make a good Harvest Moon game. I don't know. I've never played a Harvest Moon game. But so it was developed by one guy, primarily Concerned Ape, and then put out. It's a very, very cheap game. It usually is on sale between like $9 and $15. Came out in 2016, I want to say. I should have looked that up, but I'm going to Google it now real quickly. Came out a few years ago, and it was way more popular than like this guy had ever imagined. He ended up creating sort of a team, like a studio, I guess, that he works with now to put out updates to the game. The game has gotten a lot of updates over the years. And it was 2016. And they're all free updates. And yeah, so like the premise of it is pretty simple. You're a worker at what they call Joja Mart or Joja Corp, which is broadly, and I don't know, Ross, if this played for you, it's kind of Walmart.
I got it. Supermarket, like global brand type thing.
Domination. Yeah. Sucking the soul out of everything. Yep. So Joja Corp is your employer and you get a letter from your grandfather who's passed away saying that he's left you his farm and he wants you to go there when you need to like separate from the real world and commune with nature and get back to the things that really matter, like small town community and things like that. So you move in and you kind of just take the game day by day. There's farming to do, which is like the main thing, but then there's also fishing and mining and you can build relationships with the people in the community. And there's events every month, like the egg festival and the flower dance. And I love this game very, very much and have played an obscene amount of it over the years.
Yeah. What was it? How many copies of it do you own?
I have it on Steam. I have it on Switch. And that's primarily where I've played it. I do also have the phone version of it, the Android version. I have never played it, but Joe, my partner, has. Google has this thing called Google Opinion Rewards where you can fill out surveys and they give you free Google Play credit. So for a while, I had like $40 in Google Play credit and it expires eventually. So I was like, I need to find some apps to spend this money on. Sure, I need a third copy of Stardew Valley. I have since depleted that. I don't remember what I was buying, but now I have like a dollar.
I mean, yeah. Stardew Valley, it was very important to purchase. Right. So,
So I own this on like every platform that I possibly can. And Where did you play it, Ross?
I probably, in a very bad way, played it on PC. Because as you say, you played it primarily on Switch. I can imagine this is a much better game as a like a casual portable or like just stick it in your TV. You know, play it whenever you want to rather than sit at a desk that I already sit at quite a lot anyway.
And I think that's true. But to be clear, I've played a lot of it on the PC because the console ports did not come out until like, I want to say a year or so after the game had already launched. And I played it a lot the summer of 2017. So not to say I was like an early adopter or anything. It was like a year after the game had like really come out. But I started playing it before the console versions were out and before I even had a Switch, actually, for that matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think PC is like the wrong place to play it, and there is a pretty vibrant modding community for it.
Yeah, I think to sort of get slightly into my thoughts, I'm sort of setting up the what I'm about to say and giving it context because I come from a console playing background. That's what I sort of grew up on. PC gaming was something I only started probably mid to late teens, and even then it was still largely playing games that were with a controller. Mouse and keyboard is mostly foreign to me, unless it's like a strategy game or something.
Sure.
And I prefer controller where possible. I know that there are controller options for Stardew Valley, but it feels like one of those games which, because I'm at my desk and I'm not understanding a lot of the initial concepts of the game, I have to properly, like, well, properly and metaphorically lean forward to okay. really understand what's going on. I can't just, like, lean back in my chair and just, like, press buttons. I had to, like, read a lot of information, understand stuff. And also another thing, have the wiki open in another screen.
Yeah.
Because it has that whole, like, Minecraft thing of there's so many elements that you can interact with, and how they interact with each other is not necessarily very obvious.
Yeah.
Especially in a cartoonish world. Regular logic is there, but it's also a bit hyperbolic. It's over the top in some respects.
Sure. And that was one of my concerns sending you into it, is that as comforting as I think that this game is, and as much as it is like a warm blanket I want to snuggle up with, it really just does like throw you in there and say, like, Google it or die. Like, that's your options.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, I'm like, there is an onboarding process. Like, there is some level of pointing you in directions, yes. But it is also kind of, it's funny that we have this conversation after talking about Immortality, because I was really, really sour on that game. And I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, give me some level of direction. Whereas Stardew Valley really also plops you in there and says, like, just figure it out. Like, do what you want to do. But Stardew Valley, like, feels lower stakes to me, but go on.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say on that point, I think Stardew Valley has, like, a number of benefits to a less hands-on onboarding. Mm-hmm. When it came to Immortality, we're not going to talk of Immortality too much. Like, we've already covered that, I think.
I'm still mad about it. Oh, no.
Immortality had its very, like, own concept that hadn't really been done before. There hadn't been, like, a standard language of how to, like, navigate the controls there. Whilst a sort of like top-down sprite-based farm game, it's not like this is a revolutionary new thing that no one's ever done before. And it's based on something in real life of like farming and growing and watering plants. Like, the basic concept you can get on with. So its onboarding can be a lot less navigated by the game itself, because you can just go, well, I need to plant stuff. I need to water it. I'll go to town and talk to people because there's people moving about. And you do get a sense of like just that stuff happening. And the game is very much telling you, you can do what you want in that time. Like, you don't have to feel like you need to do everything initially. You can just figure it out.
This is maybe a relevant question. Have you ever played a Harvest Moon game?
No.
Okay.
I've never played a Harvest Moon game. I've never played a... what's the Nintendo games? Animal Crossing.
Okay.
The closest I have, and what I will be comparing it to mostly, is Minecraft in a way.
Okay.
I'm not sure if the games have ever appealed to me in a sense, because like farming's never been a dream of mine or a fantasy for me to get away from, you know, like city life or whatever. That nothing has specifically appealed to me. So, yeah, it was a hard sell to begin with, to say the least.
So the thing about just talking about like the mechanics and the onboarding process, I do wonder if the game is maybe over relying on its being a spiritual successor to Harvest Moon, because maybe it's making that assumption of like, well, if you're playing Stardew Valley, you've probably played Harvest Moon before, so you know kind of what to do already.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea on the history of like the original creator of Stardew Valley, but I'm imagining they were a big like fan of these farming games. And then obviously if you're a big fan of something and then you start making it, you inevitably make the dream game of what you've already played, you know?
Right.
Like, oh, this would be my perfect game if they added this. Why don't I do that? And then it just happens. So I can imagine, yeah, there's a lot of like old over from stuff that I've never played and you've never played.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting too, because when I pitched the game to you, I said, like, I think that it's worth playing this on your own, because we had played it a little bit in a multiplayer setting where you have me and Joe, my partner, who we've played so much Stardew Valley, and like we've played a lot of Stardew Valley together too. So we kind of have a natural rhythm that we just fall into with multiplayer. And I felt like we kind of left you in the dust a little bit as you were like figuring out like, how do I use my watering can?
Yeah, like that was actually an interesting sort of test case, because being thrown in the deep end of like everyone else knowing at least more than me, and you know, you knowing a lot more, meant in this multiplayer context, I had no idea. I was literally just trying to explore the basic mechanics. And I felt that pressure, I guess, of like trying to learn as quick as possible to be on your level, which I mean, I don't blame you. It was just like, you know, spending time with friends just playing. So being on the same level and like not being like, oh, I'm going to onboard you for the next hour on every mechanic. Like, no, I get it.
And to be clear, like, we weren't being jerks about it, I hope. Like, we were in, like, Ross, pull your weight. Like, come on.
I'm going to fire you. This farm's not looking good.
It's just, like, I can see that being really, really overwhelming. So how much of it did you play on your own? Like, did you get through the first season, two seasons? How much did you do?
Yeah, I got through, like, a season and a half, basically, somewhere in between that. So I did mention like the game very much allows you to do stuff, but at the same time, there's a lot of, I mean, unintentional pressure probably, like the energy system and the fact like, you know, you're trying to do stuff in a time frame of the day before it goes to night and stuff. There was like a sense of, well, I need to pull my weight, right? Like if I don't do anything today, I've wasted the day. And funnily enough, it reminded me of like some of my worst mental sort of mental health moments in my life, because it was like, oh, I remember the days I've done nothing and feel very bad about that.
And that's interesting. And I also, when I pitched the game, I did try to say like, just like take it slow and don't put too much pressure on yourself. But I think that it does, as much as it wants to be that comfort game, I think it does unintentionally create that pressure of like, I have to get this done. I have to get this done. I can't waste a day. But I think when you've played a lot of the game, you realize how forgiving the timelines are with things. Like, hey, you have to get 5 gold parsnips by the end of the season or whatever it is. Like, that doesn't take that long. That's pretty easy to do. So those timelines are very forgiving. And then also like when you get to like, I don't want to say end game of Stardew Valley, but like when you get to the end of the game, like there have been times that I've spent several in-game days in my house just decorating. And I think that that kind of breaks the mentality of like, I have to do everything all at once and get it all done before bedtime. But that clock does create pressure, especially early on.
Yeah, I think that's some of my biggest grating feelings on it is largely, it was this sense of, am I making enough progress? And the game doesn't really give you enough indication in my mind. Like, I don't feel like it celebrates enough when you do stuff, at least initially, like, because you're never quite sure. I mean, this is the whole thing with the wiki, right? Of if I didn't know, you know, I had planted something successfully. I mean, the thing I forgot, which when we were playing together was, it takes literal days for the like stuff that you plant to actually grow.
Yeah.
So I was like, am I actually taking care of these properly? Am I not? Do I have to do more than just water them the once a day?
Okay.
And it was these sort of questions which, you know, I don't want to be digging a wiki into, because it feels like this should be more obvious than it is. But
I feel like you're overthinking a little bit too. Like, I mean, it's just you plant the seed and then water it and then the soil changes color and that's it. That's all you got to do.
I mean, I think, again, this is influenced by me having a lot of experience just in games in general, right? Of like, on a very basic level, I'm looking for points. I'm looking for like monetary or like, at least numerically, like rewards that I'm getting. And when I'm not seeing a farming game and I'm not having 10 parsnips appear every day, I'm a failure.
It does say when you hover over the seeds, like takes 4 days to grow.
I found that out eventually. Okay. But again, it's that thing of, I mean, I'll state my opinion of, I didn't enjoy the game, but that's because I don't think the game's bad. I just don't think it like hit the right notes for me personally, because a lot of the progress was very much determined by how much I like invested in it. Like if I was playing it in a more casual way than I felt that the game was aiming towards, I might have like latched onto it better. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is the main drive it I found was more just playing. So one element we'll talk about is the characters, I'm sure. But the main mechanic just wasn't as compelling as could be. And the fact that, I mean, the worst thing, honestly, I didn't need a fast travel necessarily, but having to walk into town every single day and then back to bed, you can optimize that run really quickly. And then it just becomes a bit of a, why am I doing this? Can I not just skip one loading screen straight into the town? You know, can I not just take the shortcut? But
well, if you play like 1,000 hours, you can get, there's a return scepter that costs 2 million gold.
To do what?
You can, wherever you are, you can just transport right back to the farm. And then you can also get warp totems that like you can get the beach warp totem, which will transport you right to the beach. But those are single use items, like they're consumed when you use them. I really don't use that stuff. And I've never bought the return scepter, I don't think.
Okay. I mean,
just wait till you get to the island. I mean, I don't think you're going to play as much to get to the island, but like there's a whole island that like, if you want to go to the island, you have to like walk down to the pier every single day and take a boat ride there and then take a boat ride back until you get like a house there. But yeah.
So, I think this was something I also was going to come on to actually, but that's a good segue. One of the things it really reminded me of was, a period of gaming, which I really look back on and go, oh, that was rough, was the PS1 sort of era of level design and game balancing of a lot of, at least in my memory, a lot of adventure games from that era had no real like proper sense of valuing players' time, or at least like, you know, if you failed after spending 20 minutes a level, you start 20 minutes back. Okay. That's your last save point. Like auto-saving is such a modern thing in some ways, because save points were incredibly key at some when you didn't know what you were doing, and if you made one small mistake that the game didn't really like warn you about, you would revert back to like ages ago and have to go through everything again. And I'm not saying this is that, but the fact that I'm repeating the same steps just to like go to town to buy some seeds, then come back, or go fishing and then come back, it felt so much like it wasn't respecting my time. I don't know. Maybe this is also more of a, now that I've gotten older and time seems to slip between my fingers so quickly, I can't just turn my brain off anymore.
Sure. I can see how those things can get repetitive. For me, it is sort of a comfortable routine with Stardew Valley because I'm like so used to it that like it's kind of nice to know what to expect and know what I'm kind of trying to do. But I can see how that would be grating for some people.
Yeah.
The save system in the game, for those who don't know, is that anytime you go to sleep and like end the day, that's when it saves. And so like if your power went out in the middle of a day, you would lose any progress that you had made that day. And I can see that being frustrating. Actually, the mobile games either have this or they're working on adding it where it saves in the middle of the day for you. Like you can do a save in the middle of the day, just because if you're playing it on mobile, it might be like, here's the 5 minutes that I'm sitting on the bench waiting for the bus or whatever. So I want it to save even though I haven't finished my day. So like I can see that. The saving at night though thing actually becomes like a useful thing as you get into playing the game, because it's like if you really mess something up, like you accidentally sell something that you didn't mean to sell, or you die in the mines and you're like, oh, I messed up there, I can do that better and I don't want to lose money or lose items. What I do is just quit the game and like start back from that other save. But yeah, I can see how that would be frustrating too. And the point about like respecting a player's time, I do feel that. And like, that was one of my complaints with Immortality too. With Stardew, I like that it's a game that I can like say, oh, I'm going to play a day and play for 25 minutes and feel like I've done something.
Yeah,
have I sat down and played this game for far more than 25 minutes, even though I sat down, I was like, oh, I'll just do a day or two. And then it's like 3 a.m. and my life is over. Yeah. Yeah. I also get that though. And it is like, it's a slow progress game.
Exactly. Like, I think it's one of those games which I can understand why people get into it, like, conceptually.
Yeah.
Because there are some games, like, that you will spend loads of time, like, going back and forth between things. But I think my main thing is those games often have more mechanics that involve, like, how you move and stuff. So, like, if I'm bored, I will just, like, I don't know, dash or jump or whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, in 3D platformers, if you have to go far distances and you're sort of bored, you just engage with stuff right there and then. But because it's such a...
it's a simplistic game, I would say, mechanically. And I don't say that in a bad way. Just
no, I think that's... It's very much the point. Yeah, it's trying not to do too much at once with the controls that you have.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, whilst I understand you going, oh, I'll play 5 minutes and then sitting down for an hour, because that's the sort of thing I get from this game, which is it's a quest or task driven thing that you like, I'll do this one thing and I'll aim towards that, which is what I usually do in games and what a lot of games do anyway, if they allow a sort of open ended option of how to play. But I found like there were so many systems in a way, like as you progress, with the fishing, the sort of mining and the dungeon crawling aspects and stuff, mm-hmm. and then the relationship stuff, it felt like I couldn't sit down and to play it for 5 minutes, because as soon as I do this, I'm like, okay, I'll aim to do one run in the dungeon, in the mining. Mm-hmm. And then I try and do that, and it's longer than 5 minutes. And then I'm going to myself, well, if I stop now, I'm not going to remember to do this next time. And okay. I'm going to be on something else. Like, this is probably more to do with how my brain works. I'm easily distracted. So giving me so many open-ended options means I can't focus on any. And in the end, don't really do anything and get like frustrated.
Yeah, I can see how it can be very overwhelming, because it does stagger some things a little bit, where it's like, oh, this day you get your fishing rod, this day you get like the community center is unlocked. But yeah, I can see those early days being very like disorienting, of like, there's a lot of things that I feel like I should be doing and I only have so much time.
Yeah.
The way that I played this game when I first played it was I sat with like a notepad next to my keyboard and like wrote down like, okay, I want to try to get copper for upgrading my tools, and I need to get this many parsnips to put in the community center and X, Y, and Z. And kind of like I sat down and like made those plans for myself, and then decided on a day-to-day basis of like, okay, I have this much time, so like I'm gonna water my crops, and then I'm gonna head to the mines because it's raining today, so I don't have to water my crops, so I'm gonna head to the mines. So I was able to sort of organize my time and make those decisions. But I'm also a very, like, I don't know, I don't want to say type A person, but like I like my plans. At work, I have a to-do list set up for me every day, and I have like my recurring tasks of like update the whiteboard so that I write the homework for tomorrow before leaving for the day. Like, I'm a very like, I have a plan and this is how I'm organizing my time type of person. And I can see how this game would be challenging for people who are not like that.
Yeah. So I think that actually leads into something which I wish it had more of, which would have like helped me organize or like have a better goal towards, was a more intriguing narrative, because the game is more open-ended than it is narrative driven, right? Like, it's like, build up the community center or talk with some people and learn more about them. But there's nothing to really grasp on as like a mystery or a thing to really push you forward, which is how I sort of like to play games, is
pursuing kind of the story threads that interest you. And
or at least like that's how games with open-ended systems often try to push you a certain way. Not to say you have to do this, but if you have nothing else that you can think of doing, this is something that is achievable and you can aim towards, which when you have so many options, I felt like I didn't know what to do. Whilst I would have liked to have had like one option to go down this path and you'll be happy or experiencing the game in an interesting way.
And I think that there is the community center with that, but the community center takes so long to complete, and you don't really get like satisfying returns along the way, that I can see a large stretch of this game being like mostly devoid of any kind of storyline. But then on the other hand, I think it lends itself really well to like the storyline that you construct around it, of like, who is my farmer? Am I role playing myself? Am I role playing a specific type of character? And like, what is the story that I'm building around this? Because it does have a choice too of like, do you do the community center or do you pay to fix up Jojo Mart? I don't know anybody who picks the Jojo Mart route, but and so like, there is, I would say, little storytelling. I don't want to make it out that like there's no story in this game, and there's stories with individual characters who we can talk about. So there are like little threads to follow, but it's not like, oh, I'm going to go fishing today so that I can find out like the next thing in the fishing storyline. It's not that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about Pokemon Scarlet and Violet recently, which, no direct comparison, but that is a game that is, imagine playing Pokemon, but you have an open world to go wherever you want. I mean, it's still gatekept by Pokemon being of a certain level, which you fighting is a very bad idea and definitely going to lose. But they have like three main plots that you can sort of take.
Right. And it's like, oh, I find Team Star interesting, so I'm going to do the Team Star stuff.
Yeah.
So there's more of that to follow. I do wonder, though, I have an app. It's called Assistant for Stardew Valley. There's a lot of these apps out there, but it's basically like, I mean, I'm going to hold my phone up to the, and this is probably not going to work. Oh, yeah, that looks like, yeah, that's just a bright white light. But it takes you through like every day of the game. And like when you switch to a new game, you just hit the next button. And so I'm looking at the one that says Spring 26 and it says like, today's Pierre's birthday. So like, you should probably give him a present. And the traveling cart is here today. And Krobus has an iridium sprinkler for sale today. So I wonder if something like that would theoretically help you be like a little more focused and feel like you're kind of staying on top of the things that you're trying to do. But it is still very much a like self-directed game.
Yeah. I like your idea on it, but I think it then just becomes a very like handa heavy game, which I have that at work. I have meetings booked in. I'm like, I just got to get through today to get through this calendar. And then I'm free to do whatever my heart or brain decides is good today.
I mean, you can choose not to engage with a lot of these systems. Like when I first played this game, I didn't fish for the first like 3 weeks of the game. I really don't interact with the character relationships all that much. So like you can value the parts of the game that are meaningful to you and not really do the parts that are not.
Yeah. I think that's the thing is that would be a conscious decision of I am not going to interact with a part of the game that is very clearly being like shown to me as something to pursue.
Yeah.
So it sort of goes against the whole thing I was saying about, you know, I want to pursue a narrative. Well, if the game is telling me this is important, I will pursue it. So I feel like we do this every time now. And even though we've only done a couple, but it's like, I know the initial problem I have with it. And I've already told you, now I'm going to explain why. And it is, this just is a game that is not for me.
Do you think you would have a better time with it if it was played in a, let's say, healthier and more communicative multiplayer environment? Because playing it multiplayer,
it's not your fault, don't worry.
I think that there are pros and cons to playing in a multiplayer, and I don't always like playing this game multiplayer, but one value that playing it multiplayer has is that, like, Joe, my partner, enjoys the farming components of the game a lot, and I love the mines. So, like, quite often our system is like, you do the farms, I'm going to go do the mines. And so we can kind of divide and say, like, this is the part I like and this is the part I like. And yeah, sort of like relegate people to tasks. Of course, I think that relies on you having the knowledge of like, well, the mines are going to pay off to this. So we should really pursue that. And yeah, it's still very much like creating your own fun and having that vision of like where something is going to lead that you don't get as a first time player.
Yeah, I'm not sure, honestly. I like the idea of the communal play that you and Joe have, because that does mean you can sort of do your own thing. And then if someone wants to be something else, yes, that's great. I mean, that was one of the nice things about us playing multiplayer. Oh, do you want to do this with them? No, I want to go over here. Okay, cool. Do you want to come with me? So yeah, and that is actually, funny enough, what I would love from like a farming type game. That's what I feel like a farming game thematically really well resolves around. It's the idea of people working together to like make stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like you are trying to make me like this game and I will show you.
I'm just asking, like, are there angles to it that like might make it better for you or more playable? Or is it just like, this is not for me in any type of way? Like, because I'm also thinking about, we've played Minecraft together and you like Minecraft. And Minecraft is a very like throw you in there. There's a lot of systems and like figure it out kind of game.
Yeah. To compare it to like Minecraft, I think when I was first playing Minecraft, it was a big YouTube thing when I was younger. So it was something that you learned not by yourself, but by watching other people play and learn, funnily enough. And I think because it had that sort of chaotic playground nature about it, people just doing stuff and going, oh, did you know you could do this? Or, oh, did you know this would happen? Or look at this grand structure I built. That all lent to sort of a goal to go towards almost of like, you can do this, or this is how things interact. And then my brain goes, oh, I wonder how far you can push that. And then that's how I'm introduced to playing the game and certain mechanics and certain goals, right? Which maybe if I had watched a load of Stardew Valley players, I would have been like,
So that's really interesting, actually, though, because like we have played Minecraft with friends, like as a multiplayer thing. I feel like I had your experience with Stardew Valley with Minecraft. I never really like have played Minecraft. I missed the Minecraft like trend. And so I only started playing it. I think the first time I played it was with Joe when it was like early pandemic days. And we're like, what the hell do we do with all our time right now? Yeah. Let's play Minecraft. And then playing it in a multiplayer setting with you and Joe and other friends, like it was for me a lot of like everybody seems to know what they're doing. And I am still figuring out like the basics here. And so I'm just going to dig a hole. It's like, that's what I'm going to do. And so I've never really like clicked with Minecraft, even though on paper, Minecraft is like a me ass game. So
yeah.
So maybe that is part of it. And I will say too, like my introduction to Stardew Valley before I had played it was watching Giant Bomb Quick Looks, which Giant Bomb is, for people who don't know, like, I mean, a website and a YouTube channel. They just laid off a bunch of people and the site is dying. But anyway, they do like little quick looks, or they did, of just like, hey, here's a game that we're into right now that just came out. Here's like 30 minutes, an hour of it. So you can just kind of see what it's all about. And so my introduction to Stardew Valley was watching the Stardew Valley Quick Look. So I kind of got somebody explaining like, here's what I'm doing in the game and here are the systems that I've seen and here's what I really enjoy and kind of showing it off in a small way. So when I started the game first off, I felt I had like some level of background knowledge and so maybe that would have been a better way to introduce this game.
I mean, I feel like that is actually a really interesting component of games right now anyway, is advertisement is a lot more crucial in a game experience than I think a lot of us realize. So yeah, like I think if I'd never had that experience with Minecraft and people having fun in Minecraft, I wouldn't associate Minecraft necessarily with fun or, you know, doing these weird, interesting things in it, which, the same for you, I imagine, of the Stardew Valley. I never would have gone this far, potentially, unless, it's just, I think that this is also an important point, potentially, is that you can only have one type of this game that you're really obsessed by, potentially. Aww. I'm not saying that's necessarily true, but that's how I feel. Like, I don't feel like I can go into another of these. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily true either. I'm like thinking it over more and going, nah, you're wrong, Ross.
Because I also play like a lot of Animal Crossing.
I mean, I think that's the other thing though, is like, I feel like there's a lot more customization and expression in Animal Crossing than Stardew Valley. So I might get more out of that because that's something that appeals to me more. It's like, oh, what if I made this like cute little garden area and I have to work towards that, right? Yeah. And especially because that has its community of you visit other players' islands, you see what they've done, and maybe you want to recreate that or do your own version of it. So, yeah, I think there are elements that I love about this type of like genre, but I don't think they're the elements that I have like experienced, or they just don't exist in this type of game. Because funnily enough, when you were saying, when you were asking, what would made you like maybe Stardew Valley more?
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, I actually don't think I'd like it as a Pixar style game, like a top-down view game, because I like the spatial creation in Minecraft of being like, okay, cool, I'm going to build my home base in a valley where water is dripping down, and that's like what I'm going to pursue. I'm going to make my room here and there, and I'm going to put glass so I can see like water coming down from there. And that is because the 3D space is giving me that sort of like, oh, I can do that. Yeah. I can pursue that. Where Stardew Valley is, I will make the farm, and the farm is maybe not as expressive as that.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And like, there are 3D style games like this, like My Time at Portia is a big one. I don't really care for My Time at Portia. It feels like a little lifeless. And like that, something that I love about Stardew Valley is that like hits those anti-capitalism notes really, really well. Whereas My Time at Portia feels like a company saying Stardew Valley is big, make us that, make us Stardew Valley. And so like, I have a lot of problems with My Time at Portia, but I can see that for sure, that there's not so much creativity available with Stardew Valley. Yep. Although there are some people who do wild shit with their farms and make them look really, really incredible. I agree with you that I like building and creating more in like a 3D space. Like, I think about a game like Valheim, which is very, very different from Stardew Valley, but it has that incredible base building. And so like when I play Valheim with friends, and this is true of like when we've played Grounded together too, like I'm like, I'm just going to stay and build a dope base. And like, that's what I want to do. Yeah, especially when we were playing Grounded, like everybody else was going off and fighting spiders. And I'm like, anybody got some rocks?
I must perfect the building. No, you don't put stairs here. Yeah, I think that is my main gripe, is just there's a real lack of expression sure. in what you're doing. And I don't feel like that's a problem of the game itself. It's not something it pursued, so I'm not going to go, oh, should have had it. I mean, maybe it should have, but it doesn't. So, and it's not aiming to that. So
I think it gets to that difference of like, there's something that I maybe would have wanted out of this game, but it's not about me. Like maybe this game is it's just not for me. Yeah. And so I think that's valid.
And I think the fact it found an audience means that it didn't need it.
And like a prolific and dedicated audience. So
yeah.
So maybe it is just not for you, and that's fine. I do think it's interesting, though, what we were saying about, like, I had watched a video beforehand, so I know what was going on with it beforehand and, like, the social aspect of you getting into Minecraft. And again, to draw a comparison to our immortality discussion, like, I think I said something along the lines of, like, I don't want to have to talk to people to understand a game. But, like, the way that we onboard games and like advertise games is so different than it was like 10, 20 years ago that like I remember coming home with a game and like sitting there and reading the manual in the car on the way home so that I was like, oh, I know, like, okay, I know how to use that system. I know what button to press. So that then when I get into the game, like I have the games tutorial, but I also have that background knowledge. And now games don't come with manuals. And most of the time you don't even buy it in a damn box anymore. So like, there's not that learning process. It's kind of like, well, you just have to find this yourself through YouTube videos or through the Stardew Valley wiki. And so I wonder if, and I'm not saying this specifically of Stardew Valley, I'm saying this about games in general, of like, are we relying too much on that social aspect of gaming now?
You want to open it up to that?
I'm curious.
I don't think we're relying on it more now. I think it's just in a different form than it used to be.
Sure.
Because as you said, you had manuals. But yeah. I mean, that wasn't the only thing. You had gaming magazines that would review stuff and would give you brief summaries, and that would maybe excite you to play something. You had previews and stuff. Like, advertisement was the key way to show stuff off.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of problems with like advertisement, but inherently the idea of showing off what you're making and giving a feel of what it is to convince you, hey, maybe this is for you, at a core fundamental level, I have no problem with. And if other people talk about it, I mean, that's like the original way that like some of the first text-based adventure games sort of hit off back in, what was it, like the 70s or something, were just like programmers who one had made one and then they shared it amongst their friends. Like it would be on a physical disc and they're just like, hey, play this. And that wasn't because they were like going to go in blind and wanted an experience. It was just like someone told them, hey, you probably will enjoy this. So the idea of that social aspect of it, of it interacting, I think is a fundamental part of games in general. Even if you experience a single player game, you are rarely doing it in a vacuum by yourself, picking it out of a shelf or something. I mean, the fact that it's on a shelf means someone is advertising it to you in a way. It's not something you're looking for. So I don't think you can get away from it. And I just think more now, it's more crucial than it's ever been because the market is so much harder. It's so much noisier now than it's ever been that it's one of the reasons why you see things advertised a lot more is the competition out there is fierce and trying to make sure that everyone of the target audience that you're looking for is actually going to hear about it is very difficult. So yeah, getting it out there is tough, but
it's interesting with a game like Stardew Valley that very much took the industry by surprise, that like this was a little indie game that somebody intended to like put out and maybe get some people to play. And then it exploded into this giant thing that like, I wonder about that. I wonder if the game didn't have the popularity that it did, if it would be as successful, because like now you can Google like Stardew Valley Community Center guide and get like 500 things that pop up.
Yeah.
So I wonder about how accessible the game would be if that support was not there, like if you were playing it in a vacuum kind of.
Yeah. I mean, the building of a community around a game is also another thing that's huge now.
Yeah.
And Stardew Valley, like Minecraft and other type of survival games, especially as well as farming, all of these resource management games are very much like, here's the core audience who love to explore those systems and then write about them and learn about them together. And then they give that to people who aren't necessarily interested in exploring these things and just want the answers. So the community itself is trying to grow the community naturally, not because it's got like a monetary investment into it. It's just, we want this game that we enjoy to be seen and loved by more people, which at the essence of it is what I love about community building. But yeah, I can understand as well, there's obviously cynical takes. I mean, like I say, there's lots of problems I have with advertising, but at the core idea of like what advertising is and what a community is around a game is inherently good for the game, the players, and the creators. It's just good. So yeah, Stardew Valley. To stay on topic.
Yeah, well, I'm going to segue real nice here. So community is what this game is all about. Did any of that hit for you? Like that feeling of like building and creating a community and like the small town storyline that's kind of going on there. And I don't know how much of that was like exposed to you since you didn't play too much of it.
Yeah, in terms of the community of the game, of the in-game, to clarify, it was obviously exposed because I think it's either the first or second task you have is like meet everyone in the village, right? So that's one of the few things that you're navigated towards doing and frequently are frustrated by it because you don't know where anyone is.
Yeah.
There's like, is it 26 or 36 characters? I think
there's 27.
Like
there are, 27. There are ones that are added on later. 27, I think, is the starting number.
Yeah. So the thing is, I actually think that's way too many for the beginning.
That is a lot.
It was a case of me going, okay, cool. I need to find everyone. And then when you're down to like, I've seen 20 people and I have no idea where this last few are, you are just like, well, I'm just going to give up on this.
Yeah. There are mods out there that will modify the map, like the map you have in the menu to show like the little person's icon of like where they are. I feel like that maybe should be in the damn game.
Yeah. As like an option just to switch on and off if you really want it to not obscure the map maybe all the time.
And but like there's a whole thing about like the character schedules and like it changes by day of the week. And then it's like, oh, well, on this day of this month, this character has a doctor's appointment. So like there's a whole lot. And yeah, I can see that like a meet everybody quest being really, really overwhelming. The easy way to do it is just to go to the bar one night and talk to everybody there because most characters go to the bar at some point.
This is the other problem where it sort of leads back into what I mentioned earlier, but I don't like the pixel style as well because there is not enough detail sometimes for me to quickly tell, have I talked to this character before? Have I not? Their portraits are great and distinct enough, but when you're just seeing like, I don't know, an 8x4 or whatever character, it's like, maybe I've talked to you. Is that a different shade of like black or purple or something? And you're like, maybe you're just a color palette swap because that's also a thing that some games do. So
this game does not. This is one that's hard for me to speak to because like I know this game so well and I know the characters so well that like I can like race by somebody on my horse and be like, oh, well, there's Demetrius. but I get how it's super overwhelming first thing in the game. Like here's 27 people that I need to memorize what they look like.
Yeah, I think funnily enough, this, and I said I wouldn't talk about it much more, but Immortality Share is the progression system needed more signposting or a lot more like you get to this point, then you look for more characters.
Sure.
So, you know, maybe the first task is talk to every shopkeeper because you need to learn all the shopkeepers first and then talk to all of the romanceable partners that you can pick. And, you know, it would like grow and you would eventually learn who these people are or how they fit into the town better. But no, it's just like go and find literally everyone. And I'm like, we could change this. I get why you may not have, but yeah. So I did try. I did play as a male character, and that was purely because I looked at the guys and I was like, no, none of them interest me at all. And I know the only thing that's really different is depending on the gender you pick at the beginning.
So did you, this is a small question, but like, did you make like Farmer Ross and play as Farmer Ross?
I never do that.
Really? So when I play this game, I have multiple save files every time I play as Cassie and I make myself. Joe, when he plays this game, I think his first time he was Robo Joe, where he played like a robot version of himself. he has ones where he plays as me. He like made a character named Cassie and plays as me. He's got all kinds of wild ones. So I was curious of like, did you play this as yourself or did you just like create a character?
Generally, if a game gives me a system of like, I mean, this is actually funny enough, stuff like other, actual RPGs, which are like, you create a character. I never think of, well, this will increase my immersion if I play as me in this world. And no, that would take me out of it more than anything. So I always create a character that is just whatever's in my head and then I will build whatever I need to around it. But at the same time, I could have built myself because there was so little plot for it to invade my like sense of context and reality. Like, I couldn't lose myself in this and go, but Ross is breaking it. Ross is breaking my sense of immersion.
It depends on the game for me. Like, I play this game with me in it. I'm not going to play Mass Effect and be like, well, here's Commander Cassie Shepard. Like, yeah, so it depends on the game. But yeah, I play this one as me. So were there characters that you like enjoyed or didn't like? Or did you not engage with the characters much at all?
I mean, put it this way. It felt weird in a way, because I think I would have gotten more into that aspect of it when I was younger, which makes me sound like an old man. But so much of the artwork makes some of them look like teenagers.
A lot of them are teenagers.
Yeah, that's the other thing as well. And also properly make it look like, oh, yeah, you're young, which makes me go, what is it, Abigail, who, like, alt girl, definitely something I am into, but when I look at her and I go, nope, she looks like she's not even gone to her first concert yet. I'm like,
her and
you would be, but no,
her and Sam and Sebastian, I have that trouble with a lot, because they all look like high schoolers and are like kind of written to be high schoolers but also not, and so it's like it's kind of like, I'm a little too old for this.
So it did mean, like, this is the other thing, though, like, to be real about it, is the idea of, if I pursue, what is her name, the parent looking, the older woman.
A lot of the older women are married. Leah, maybe? She, like, lives in a little cabin in the woods. She's an artist and, like, red hair. Yes. She looks a lot like Robin, so I can see you getting those two confused.
Yeah, I think maybe you're right. Okay. But, so I'm like, okay, I could go with more of the elder. No, I could go with a more older, like, woman, because if I'm
Leah is still young.
No, I meant, no, hold on. Reverse.
There's like a grandma. There's Evelyn. Are you thinking
about Evelyn? Evelyn's married. I mean, if only.
Maru?
Do you say Lee or Leah?
I think it's supposed to be Leah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Leah is like the most mature looking woman, which made me feel like, okay, I'll try and
I would say mature looking single woman. Mature looking single woman.
Sure. Yes. Yeah, we're talking like I don't know, in the Regency era, she would be too old now, but she is definitely not old. So yeah, like, I was like, okay, I'll try pushing that. But I'm not gonna lie, my main problem is I understand it, and this is actually, funny enough, something I like in other games but hated here, was the heart system, which is like the relationship building indicator, and you know, you're supposed to hit certain milestones to grow your relationship with someone. It's something that's taken from like JRPGs or like dating sims and stuff like that.
Give this person enough items and they'll fall in love with you.
I mean, this is the other thing. I actually watched a GDC talk from YouTube recently, literally about how this is like you're basically going, oh, if I give you enough gifts, you'll love me, right? Rather than it being, this person likes me.
Yeah.
And the aspects of my character or who they're inhabiting, and I appeal to them by being more what they want. It's no, oh, I really like salads and I hate licorice. Well, okay, I won't give you licorice, I guess. Oh, you're amazing, I love you. Which, yeah.
It is a pretty shallow, like, relationship system.
Yeah, and the storyline that I was exploring with Leah was not interesting enough for me to want to actually pursue the relationship. Because that would be a thing, like, if there was enough of like, oh no, I'm interested to see where her development comes as a character, and that would maybe make me stick out and try to meet the next goal and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if it's just, I'm going to keep giving you gifts and then arrive at your house like at certain points in the week, I'm not feeling it as much.
Okay.
So yeah, I wanted to like the characters. They're fine, but they're largely not stereotypes exactly, but like, they are so plain in some ways that it's hard to actually say they're stereotypes, because they're there to exist as townspeople, but not actually to be people or characters.
And I think they do very much fall into like tropes. Like, Sam is the guitar player, Abigail is the alt girl. And like, so yes. they all kind of have that sort of role. I do think that a lot of them do get fleshed out through their storylines if you do go through and give them enough gifts and play all their storylines. I don't want to say that they're walking and talking tropes, but I do think that they do fall into those like categories very neatly. But again, like yes. I don't think that this game was ever trying to be like a visual novel dating simulator. I think that it is what the genre you would expect.
Sure. I mean, if they were, the problem I've got with that though, is if they're adding like a progression system for relationships, they were emulating a lot of like classic tropes of that genre.
Yeah.
So I think they were trying to aim for it in a way, but at the same time, I don't want to say they half-heartedly did it because I don't think that's fair. But I think whatever they originally thought it could be, they didn't achieve that.
Okay.
They had to pare it back to something more plain and direct.
Okay. I was going to do a fun little goof where I had you pick out the character that I like routinely romance in all of my playthroughs, but it sounds like you don't know their names very well. So,
I mean, I could get that list up again.
I think that it is an expected choice for me, given some of the other options that I have made in games.
Is it a bachelor or bachelorette?
Bachelorette.
I mean, I don't actually know your taste in women that well.
Consider Mass Effect.
Is it Emily because she's got blue hair?
No. Although I do like Emily.
Who is technically the most bookish? I actually didn't go.
The one who spends the whole day in the library.
Is that Penny?
Yeah, it's Penny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I can see it.
I like Penny a lot. And Penny does have an interesting, they added in something where you can like build a house for her. She lives in the trailer with her mom.
Oh, yes,
and
of course.
You can spend 3 million gold in the game to build her a house as like a late game thing. I have done that and it did make me cry. It was a really sweet scene. It was a really sweet scene of like her and her mother being like, this is such an amazing gift and like things are going to be different. And her mom says like, you know, I know like I haven't been great to you and I know that I've been drinking a lot and that means that we've lived in this trailer, but now we have this opportunity to do better. So like there are these like real heartfelt stories in there, but whether you want to like give Penny enough diamonds to get to that point,
do you want to become Penny's sugar mama to then like buy her a caravan and go, I got you, babe?
Yeah, like, and then like that feels a little icky too. And you do have a choice in that moment of like, do you reveal yourself to be the one who funded it or just let them think that like it was a mysterious donor? And okay. Yeah, there's interesting stuff with it. And then also like it does feel a little weird to be like, I bought you this house, now marry me.
Yeah, that is bad signaling.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the other thing as well, is just the idea of like the way you describe it anyway was suddenly once I have a house, I realize I've been a fool this whole time. That sort of is a problematic trope in many respects, but I mean, I think my thing is I don't mind that when I feel that something is being very honest with itself, like it's not holding back, and it's just being an honest story of like, this is how I feel and whatever. Like, this is why I really like Kingdom Hearts, is because it's a very character-driven story rather than a plot-driven story necessarily. And when like characters say they love each other in that, or like, I will find you one day, is, oh no, I believe it. There is no cynicism here.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst I feel like I don't get that with Stardew as much.
Really?
But I didn't pursue it as much. So
I don't ever feel that this game is cynical at all. I think that it's a very earnest and just like pleasant experience.
I'm not trying to say it is cynical. I just don't believe it as much because of how I experienced it feeling very like rough and ready to just get into it.
Sure.
I couldn't just lose myself in the niceties of everything. It was like, do I have enough parsnips? Can I afford carrots? And that made me go like, funny enough, it's critique on like capitalism stuff. Then inevitably put me into a loop of capitalism of, can I afford to buy the next thing to build my farm? And I mean, that's also another problem I technically have more on the social side of its presentation, which I'm sure in every game we're going to bring up, is as much as I like the idea of there being a, you are free to romance anyone in the village, no matter which gender you pick. If I'm remembering right from what I've read, they don't express themselves the same for each player gender. So like if you pursue something as a female character with one of the men, there's like very traditional heterosexual type relationship. Whilst if you're a male character pursuing them, it's a bit more like, oh, I'm questioning myself. And
I don't know to what extent that's there. Like I've only ever played as a female character, and I like only ever have tried to romance Penny. I don't remember if there was anything in that about like it being a I guess lesbian relationship, but it could just be that like Penny is, you know, down to clown already with girls, so like it's fine. And there might be other characters who have more of a like growing experience with that. I'm not sure. I can't speak to that.
I think it's still rooted in that whole player sexualness of it all, right? Of it's not that these are actual characters. These are meant to appeal to you in some way or another, which is why you pursue Penny every time, because the other characters are not compelling you in some interesting way.
Right.
You're going for what you find interesting or comforting almost, which is a comment on you. I think that's a comment on the characters not being developed enough to be interesting enough.
Sure.
When I play something like Mass Effect or Dragon Age, I'm playing it and I do pick different romance options when I replay it, because I go, okay, I pursued this other character, but you have your own interesting things, and I'd like to see where that goes and how that develops. Like, what do you like in a relationship? Which I know can be very different for each character. Whilst in this, I feel like it is still like, oh yeah, nope, thanks for the cupcakes. Well, I guess we're married now.
And the interesting thing, too, about Stardew is that you can be boyfriend or girlfriend to every single character all at once. And there's not really, like, ramifications for that.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, in a game like Mass Effect, it's like, no, this is the love interest that I am committing to for this game, or even for this, like, trilogy of games. And so,
and it
like,
challenges you.
It challenges
you. Try to do that. So
I don't know how well you remember me playing Mass Effect, but I was hot on Liara, romance Liara in Mass Effect 1. Liara is not really a romance option in Mass Effect 2, and so I romanced Garrus because I was like, let's see what's going on with Garrus. There's a small scene in Mass Effect 2 where Liara appears and is like, oh well, like as you know, you and Garrus are a thing. I felt horrible about myself. guilty. And so maybe this is why I also stick with Penny, that I'm like, if I play another playthrough and romance Emily, I'll be cheating on Penny.
I'll be better next time, I promise.
Yeah, whereas like I've looked over Joe's shoulder when he's playing, and on the like little relationship thing where it shows your heart level with everybody, it's like boyfriend, girlfriend, boyfriend, girlfriend, 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 boyfriend.
That's the problem I have with that sort of system inherently, is it's a progression to meet. It's not a something that you choose and the other characters, you know, respond to. So that's my problem with larger like romance systems and games. So I don't think that's unique to this one.
I think it's a deliberately sort of shallow system, that they weren't here trying to build this like sweeping romance within the game. But I do want to touch on the thing you mentioned about like the capitalism in this game, of like, as much as it does have some vibes of capitalism, you're also like trying to run a farm and make as much money as possible so you can afford the next like big thing. I do think that that is true. And I'm not trying to say that this is like a sweeping anti-capitalist narrative and that it's like, I don't know, some Disco Elysium stuff or anything. I've never played Disco Elysium. I just know it has a lot of like communist stuff going on in it.
Oh, that's something we can put on the list.
I really don't want to play. but I do think that there is sort of a bent to this game of like, yes, you are making money and trying to buy things, but it's about like putting that money back into the community and investing in small town community of, you know, when you go and buy the seeds from Pierre versus when you buy them from Jojo Mart, and like you're selling them theoretically to the villagers, you're selling your crops theoretically to the villagers of the town. So it's about, I think, more about not like dismantling systems of capitalism so much, but dismantling like oligarchy capitalism, where it's like, here's the four companies that like run the world. It's not so much about like moving away from systems of money. It's more about like, let's focus on the people and like modify these systems that we have to focus more on small town community and supporting each other and building up those community centers, as it was.
Sure. I can understand that view. I will say, like, in a more cynical view, is that it's sort of perpetuating a savior complex of, one person comes to down at town and rejuvenates the whole town, and they're really thankful for that.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I get what you're saying about it's about building up the community as part of like giving back. The problem is it's just your character really doing that. Everyone else sort of like is only responding to you being successful rather than them also trying to do their own thing. And I think this is more to do with the whole shallowness that you mentioned of it was never pursuing to do more than what it has. Mm-hmm. But I think that means that it's up for interpretation of, well, really, the idea of community is in one person coming to town and just making loads of money.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I will say that if you were to play through the game and finish the community center, there's like a big scene where all the villagers in the town sort of have this like moral reckoning of like, we've been buying into the Jojo Mart stuff because it's cheap and because it's easy. And because and in doing that, we've really lost sight of what actually matters. And like, let's follow the player character's example and let's drive Jojo Mart out of town is kind of how that plays out. And it does change the dynamics of the town in a small way. Like Pierre opens his store extra days during the week. And because they run Jojo Mart out of town, and then the characters' schedules change where like a lot of them now just spend time in the finished community center when it's all done.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Yeah. So there are some little changes, but again, it's a pretty like surface level storyline. But I don't think that Stardew Valley was out here to like send this giant capitalist message either.
No. So it's funny you mention that, though, of like we need to go back to the roots of our community. And that is actually quite a right wing angle on a lot of like small town issues.
I think it can be taken that way. Sure. Yeah. That's like what conservatives say of like, I don't want to pay taxes because like I'm giving money to who knows what. I'd rather make like small local donations and support local businesses. And like that's often in a dog whistle of like, well, I just don't want these people to get the help that they need. And I want to choose the people who I give my money to.
Yeah. I mean, even if we're not going completely political, the whole economic idea of isolationism of like only money will be within our like community because we are going to lose it to someone outside of our like community. And like I know this is more like it's not plainly saying that, but the fact that it can be more, it can be interpreted like that, it does make me go, I don't know, it doesn't make me think it's cynical, it just makes me feel like it's innocent and shouldn't necessarily be exploring this topic without more to say. But again, as we talked last time, we don't necessarily have to have games or any story really going and making a moral decision for us.
Right.
But if the interpretation is available there, it's also worth discussing.
Sure.
Discussing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I can see that. Like I said, I think Stardew is a very like surface story, and I think that it's a game that's very friendly for children in a lot of ways. And so having just like a nice sort of simplistic story of like care about the people around you and focus on like building connections with people and creating a sense of community. Obviously, people can take that in all kinds of insidious ways. I think that for what it is and for the extent that I think that the developer of the game was interested in it, I think it works.
Yeah.
Like, again, I don't think it was ever setting out to be a sweeping, like, political criticism of the world.
No. I feel like this is not to insult it, because I don't think it is, but for a massive fan-made type project, I think it does a lot of good, especially for someone who initially started out primarily solo. These sort of projects can easily get bogged down or sort of lost in, well, a lot of problems. And I'm sure that they had plenty of challenges doing this, but I always find it amazing when an indie game does go really successful, because it's always something that the industry looks at and goes, well, what happened here? How can we replicate that? You know, that can be cynical in its own way, but even just like as a dev or as someone who works on games, looking at it and going, what did they do? Because that's really cool, rather than necessarily that's what did they do so I can make money. It's just an appreciation for how people by themselves can do all this. And seeing any small success is always cool to see. And as much as I will say for the last time, as much as this is not a game for me and was never made for me and doesn't appeal to me, I think it is fundamentally still good, and I'm glad people enjoy it.
Yeah, and it's just like you do have to appreciate it as like a passion project and how remarkable it is that one guy like made this himself, like did everything, did all the art, did all the music, like did all of that, at least for the initial release. And then as they put out those updates, they got a larger team who contributed a lot to it. But yeah, like I do get that sense from it that you like respect what's going on there. I think the vibes are just like impeccable in this game. And it's just, and this is like a time and place thing that I played this game. I was moving out of my hometown hours away. I was changing colleges. I was right before a big change in my life. And so it was the months leading up to that where I was kind of like floundering of like, I know I don't want to be here anymore. And I'm about to get to this point in my life that I do want to be at. But here's the 2 months until I do actually do that. So like, it was just a summer where I was like in a weird place in my life. And like, I think I mentioned this when I pitched the game too, that like I had switched some medication and was on some weird hormonal stuff and was like really up and down. So like, it was a comforting thing that I knew that I could go to it and I knew what to expect. And I felt like I had control over what I was doing. And so it really hit me at the right time and place. And so now when I go back to it, it's very much just like, this is just like a nice, comforting place to be. Yeah, but I had built that relationship to it. Like it became my comfort game.
Yeah. And you're not the only person that I know who has had that sort of engagement. And that's also why I think it's commendable largely is the fact that people can get that attached to a game and it be healthy is maybe not the right word, but like have a healthy relationship with the game and like learn from it and sort of appreciate it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad those sort of games exist.
Yeah. It was a bonding thing too. Like when I started playing it, like I played it a bunch, like one night, stay up to like 4 a.m. And then Joe, my partner, was like, tell me about Stardew Valley. Like, show me what you're doing. And then sat there and watched me play for another few hours. And then like, it was a lot of like us trading off the controller and sort of like discovering the world of it together. Aww. And so, yeah. And like, that's the interesting thing about this format of us like pitching a game that like inevitably we're going to pitch games that like mean a lot to us. And like I was at a specific time and place in my life when I played this. And so I get that like that won't translate to somebody who just plays it as like, oh, I guess I'll check this out.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to recommend games to you, which are going to be probably not up your alley, but will have meant something to me. Yeah. But, you know, like we've said initially in the first episode, pitching something that, you know, at least if the other person can understand why it's like significant for them or why it's interesting in some ways, like that's really the goal is to, you know, understand.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. All right. That's Stardew Valley, I guess.
Cool. Thank you for recommending Stardew Valley.
Thank you for trying it.
Yeah. All right. The game that I have for you today is a recent game that I've played and I think is something that, I mean, it's different from everything else that we've talked about so far and is actually a lot more traditional of a game. That game is Vampire Survivors. Vampire Survivors is a sort of top-down pixel game, an action roguelike. I think most people know what roguelikes are these days, but to explain it, a roguelike is essentially a game where you sort of have a larger layer of things of leveling up going on. And when you initially like go into a level, typically you're expected to die or fail in some way and then repeatedly play it over time as you sort of like gain these larger levels, these extra experience points or like knowledge. And it's supposed to be like a replayable experience, which, you know, you learn from and then progress further into. So Vampire Survivors in particular. So the reason I'm bringing it up is it's a game which initially started as a browser game back in 2021 before it was released on Steam, I think in the same year, at least like around that change of time. So it's a game that's sort of been around a bit by this point, but it only really got its like full attention late last year when it released like its version one. Everything prior was more its development period. The reason I'm recommending this is, funnily enough, what you were mentioning in Stardew Valley of sitting there for 5 minutes and like playing through a day in Stardew Valley. One run in Vampire Survivors can be just something you sit down for 5 minutes to do. But if you're doing really well, you could be there for 40 minutes and not realize, but you're getting more invested as time goes on. So as a basic premise, you basically have no narrative. Funnily enough, I was talking about needing narrative to push me forward. I lied. The other way to really push me forward is to get me to learn something and do it through an interesting iterative manner. Meaning, in Vampire Survivors, you initially start off with like one character called Antonio. His name really doesn't matter, but he wields like a whip. It's a like top-down view game, so something like an old school Zelda, where you have like hordes of enemies slowly coming towards you over time, and the only control that you have is the movement control. You have no control over anything else.
Not your weapons?
So I mentioned this. Yes. Okay. So I mentioned this character had a whip. Now the whip will basically automatically whip out in front of him in an arc every second and a half. I don't actually know the timing. And it will do that on a loop. So the control that you have of the movement is to direct Antonio to face a certain direction to defeat enemies. And as you defeat enemies, you gain experience points that they can drop, then pick up, and you gain levels. And these aren't really spoilers because this is sort of like what you learn initially.
I consider spoilers more like story stuff. And if this game doesn't have story, like, you know, I don't know. I like getting better weapons and armor, I don't consider that a spoiler.
No, I agree on that. I would say, though, that I think the experience is the spoiler. In the sense of, if I just told you everything that was going to happen, you'd be like, oh, okay. But I think the reason I'm recommending it is this is one of those roguelikes which you are learning as you're playing. Mm-hmm. And you will learn sort of your preferences or how to do certain things. So going back to like the first character, since you are like picking up these experience points, when you gain enough, which is very quickly early on, a level, you are given three options of weapons or items to sort of upgrade to. These can be things like upgrading the whip, so now it like is a bit bigger or does more damage, or it has a quicker cooldown, so it will lash out more. Mm-hmm. Or you'll have stuff like armor, which will mean you take less damage, or all your weapons will like recover a bit faster and stuff. But also you can upgrade these items multiple times as you gain levels. So the real reason I'm pitching it is because I'm very curious to see how you experience it and if you find the systems in place intriguing, because it's one of those games which slowly opens up to you over time as you're playing it instead of throwing you in the deep end.
Yeah, it's not a game that I think I would ever pick up for myself. Like, I don't think I would like see this on Steam and be like, oh, that seems like something I would enjoy. So that makes me interested to try it. You know, you never know what you're going to like until you try it. And also just because I'm at a weird point with games now where like there's something that I liked for a really long time and I thought I knew what I liked. And then more and more I've been playing games that have like been the antithesis of that. So, yeah. So like I'm interested in that point. Have you played Rezogun? It was like an early PS4 title.
Yes. It was like one of the first games you could download on it, I believe. Yes.
Yeah, I bought my PS4 on launch and played Rezogun in Contrast on it.
So. Yeah, nothing was out. It was just like two games.
Yeah, there were things that were out. I just didn't buy them. But like this reminds me of Rezogun a little bit, just like looking at a screenshot or two of like you slowly upgrade your weapon. But like I have to imagine that that's a mechanic that's in a lot of games and I just haven't played any of them except for Rezogun.
Oh, I'm not gonna lie, I don't remember this game from 9 years ago.
Yeah, very well. You don't remember this PlayStation Network game from 9 years ago that like was $15 and nobody really talked about? Shocking.
Funnily enough, I remember people really talking about it.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I would say actually it's a lot deeper, Rezogun, but I can't remember the game that well to properly confirm that. But it definitely has that, you like want to play one more run.
Yeah.
Because definitely early on, I got frustrated with it and I didn't understand it. But it gave me that sense of play it a bit more. There's a bit more here. And I'm wondering if you'll feel that or not.
Okay.
Because I knew that was coming. Just as basically a roguelike does that. You always know that there's more going to be introduced, but I wasn't sure how far it would push those systems or options for you. So
as a roguelike game, it has that like risk reward thing. Is that right? Of like, do I end my run here and like take what I have earned? Or is it like, is there a set end to a run?
So, I mean, the set end to a run is you die. It sort of is just a, not an endless runner, but like it's an endless gauntlet of okay. enemies that will never stop coming at you.
And so you just play until you die.
Yeah, you okay. just play until you die, which you can obviously go, yep, I'm just going to get myself killed so I can like stop this run. And obviously, as part of the roguelike experience, things don't carry over. Mm-hmm. However, the one thing that does carry over every time is gold coins. And these gold coins are then used to purchase upgrades, okay. which are more permanent on your character. And yeah, that's the sort of system to begin to find more stuff.
Okay.
But there is more to it than that. And it's probably a roguelike that I had the least amount of knowledge in its systems. I just saw like, oh, this is like a bullet hell experience from all the trailers I saw of just mad effects on screen and loads of enemies everywhere. And okay. I was like, this is too much for me. But it released, I believe, near the end of last year on mobile. And that's how I played it. Played it for free, but it has ads that you can use to get bonus gold or be revived once per run. Okay. So not intrusive, really. It's very much a, okay, do I want to revive? Do I want more gold? No, fine. Then you just, you know, go to your next run. So it's probably where I'd recommend to play it. It was first initially quite difficult to play, but because I thought, oh, since it's a game just about movement of like up, down, right, left, I thought keyboard, perfect. WASD is going to be best for this, but I did learn like how to play it on mobile, which a lot more mobile games are very good at that now. So okay. yeah,
I have only ever played one roguelike game, which was Moonlighter, and I kind of fell off of Moonlighter. Moonlighter is like kind of a roguelike game and kind of a shop simulator. Moonlighter is a decent game, but yeah, so I don't have a lot of experiences with roguelikes. I hope I don't have to ask this for every game that you pitch to me. Is there like an end to the game, or is it just kind of like play as much as you like and play as much as you're enjoying and then just kind of stop when you feel like you've gotten what you wanted out of it?
Pretty much play as much as you like. I have not played it much recently since I have to commute on the train and I spend a portion of it underground with no mobile signal. It means that games which play offline are actually quite valuable, I guess, mm-hmm. Because it means it's something that I will definitely play, because if it's an online only, I have no ability to play it while I'm just on the train. So it was my go-to game to play on the train for a while. And like, there were periods where I was playing it for my whole commute of like 40-ish minutes. And realizing, oh God, I'm one stop away. either do this really quickly or just die uh-huh. before it happens. So I think it's one of those things where once I got what I wanted out of it, or I didn't feel like I could have enough progress, I, funny enough, looked at its wiki to find out more information. Funny that. But at the same time, I could have just dropped it there mm-hmm. and still been completely satisfied with what I've played.
Okay.
But it's also a game that I'm willing to dip back into now and then if I just want to try something new.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how it works out for me, because I don't have a commute. Like, my lifestyle doesn't lend itself to mobile gaming much. I drive 4 minutes up the road to work. So I can't really be playing a mobile game.
Oh, I wish that was my life some days.
Well, you know, I do walk sometimes too. It's just, it's winter and it's cold right now, so sorry.
I would not play this while walking.
Yeah, yeah. Distracted. And so like, it's on Game Pass, so I will probably play it on my Xbox or something, or even play it on the PC.
Yeah,
although it's $5 on Steam, so like, it's not like it would be breaking the bank to just buy it and play it that way.
No, true. Yeah, I can only attest for the mobile version, but I'm sure it's because it is such a simple control scheme, mm-hmm. it's not gonna be too big of a difference to experience.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to give it a try.
Oh, I'm excited to hear.